just wound up somebody getting knocked over in their chair. It wasn't, you know, the complete drifted mess that Springer had. I'm sure Morton Downey Jr. must be dead from the chain smoking that he did from the show, but you never know.
This was quite a few years ago. He had like stage 3, stage 4 lung cancer. Cause yeah, he used to smoke like a chimney. And if I got a free hand, I could look his name up on the computer. Yeah, he might no longer be with us.
That is now the race to the technology. We've raised a question and we must know. We used to be able to wait until the next day and say, I'll go to the library, but now everything must be in hand.
Junior high school, this could be like fifth grade. But what age is that, like 10, 12 years old? We actually had a course in library science. And the final exam is, here's a question, 20 questions. But, you know, not so much the answer is important, as we want you to show your work. You know, where did you go look this up? You know, if it was an article on what's, let's say, who is the top American band in July of 1958 or whatever, you know, answer and then tell you where, oh, well, that would be the Groves Dictionary of Music over in the reference section. And on this particular page and whatever. You know, nowadays you don't have to know that. I'd like to take one of these teenagers, you know, and take them to the library. We still have libraries with books in them, right? It's not just a big homeless shelter. And, okay, give me all the portable computers. All the libraries have them too now. There's a computer terminal somewhere. Give me all the electronics, and here's some stuff I need to know. Go research it the way I used to have to. I bet they'd be lost.
Dewey Decimal System was such a mess, man. You had to get like, okay, it's in the 600 section. It's 632.195698-11. And you'd finally go back there and say, oh, it's missing. Oh, information on Morton Downey Jr. was an American television talk show host and actor who pioneered the trash TV format in the late 1980s. Born December 9, 1932, Los Angeles. Died March 12, 2001, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles. And they showed a picture of him before he died. I think the lung cancer got him.
TV, okay. He basically invented trash TV. Hey, cut the crap! Wasn't that one of his, but, yeah, you know, as for these 18, 19, 20-somethings, turn them loose in the public library with a request for research, and without access to Wikipedia, I'd like to see how they actually manage.
It was actually canceled in 1889, but you can still find it on like late night TV. You can find it repeats of it. It was officially canceled just about this time 33 years ago. July 20th, 1989 was the last, well, actually the last original episode was taped June the 30th, and it continued through September the 15th of that year. And they said it was actually not what he did on screen, it was his often bizarre off-camera behavior. So, his producer said, it's a disappointment, but I'm not surprised. So we've been waiting for the shoe to drop for weeks, and said the staff is handling it with a tremendous sense of humor. So we've been on this roller coaster ride without a seatbelt anyway. The Morton Downey Jr. Show.
Using a large silver bowl for an ashtray, he would chain smoke during the show and blow smoke in his guest's face. Downey's fans became known as loudmouths, patterned after the studio lecterns decorated with gaping mouths, from which Downey's guests would go head-to-head against each other on various issues.
What they canceled it for is he claimed that he was in the San Francisco airport in 1989 and some skinheads in the men's room of the airport beat him up. That wasn't it. I think he fell down drunk or something like that. But anyway, his people went on to do a lot of other stuff, including getting hired by Oprah when she started her show and her network.
This is somebody beat him up in a restroom at the airport, tried to paint a swastika on his head, or so he claims. The fact that it was painted backwards suggests that he tried to paint it himself. So, idiot didn't even get that right. Oh yeah, who is that? Who am I thinking of about that other congressman in some other airport restroom? The one who was tapping his foot against the stall against, why is it all these people always end up getting caught doing something in the public men's toilet?
Oh, you're talking about it's on the tip of my tongue here. Yeah, the toe-tapping stall stalker.
Got on the tip of my tongue as well. I mean, he's a U.S. congressman. If he still is, I don't know. But, you know, and whenever I hear from these, I don't know if I'm going to get in a religious war now or not. Whenever I hear from these moral majority types, you know, do as I say, not as I do. I'm more moral than you. You know, you're a sinner, blah, blah, blah. It always seems that they end up getting caught in the restroom with a sheep or something, or a hotel room with a 14-year-old boy. So, yeah, it's just the hypocrisy of most of these people.
I mean, who could forget, who was the gal that Jim Baker wound up with? That caused the controversy and him and Tammy Faye to break up and the whole empire of PTL to fall down. Jessica Hahn. That was her name.
Yeah, there's a name I haven't heard in a while. And she ended up having some sort of TV or film career because of that, I think. I mean, probably not a good career, but I seem to remember her from some television show. Yeah, Jessica Hahn. Hey, you know, she wasn't bad looking, and God, we saw the nightmare that Tammy Faye Baker looks like, I don't know, a female version of the Joker from the Batman comics. My God, that was an ugly woman.
Yeah, the mascara and Saturday Night Live did one of the best lampoons of her. I don't know how they got it in the makeup to have the mascara pouring down her face and by the gallons of who was playing her. I don't think it was Radner playing her, Gilda Radner, but it was one of the better ones from the 80s that Saturday Night Live when it was relevant and funny. But, you know, it was weird. She got on that strange, before she died, she got in that really weird reality show with her and a bunch of rock and rollers and other crazy people went around and, what did they do, move into people's houses or something like that. It was on one of the side networks, TBS or one of them. I forget what it was, but you know, Jim Baker's back out in Arizona. And he started up basically with his new wife doing the same old thing.
He played her on Saturday Night Live. What was I going to say? As you were talking about this, I had something I was... whatever it was, I guess it'll eventually come to me. Yeah, but, you know, he disappeared off the scene for a while. You know, and then at least there was at least one other. But, yeah, you know, I don't watch religious programming as a general rule, so, all I remember is, who is the guy from the Moral Majority? Jerry Falwell. He was a particularly nasty, greedy, whatever kind of character. And who was the guy who was always saying, you know, send me $25 million so I could buy a private plane. Might have been a colored man, Creflo Dollar. Yeah, he's got the right surname, Dollar. Yeah, Daddy needs $20 million for a new Gulfstream. So, you know, again, not to get into a religious war, but I have my own opinion.
Jerry Fundwell, and then Pat Robertson, he had to have a big plane to help the kids in Africa. He had a mobile, it was a L-1011. No, it was not an L-1011. It was a big Airbus, I believe. It could have been an L-1011. He had a mobile hospital, but it wound up a little controversy about that. He had some interest in some diamond mines. But anyway, get back to SNL. It was March 1987. Phil Hartman played Jim Baker and Jan Hooks. I forgot about her. And she was interviewed on Church Chat with Dana Carvey as the church lady.
I forget about the church lady. Then again, that might have been a while ago. How many decades has it been since that show has been the least bit relevant? Because I don't think I've even tried to watch it in 20 years. And it's been on since maybe the mid to late 70s. But in the past 15 or even in the past 20 years, it's basically had nothing to say. So I don't think I've seen an episode of Saturday Night Live in quite a very long time.
Talking about that, the first season that they ran it was, what, 75? They refused to air it on the NBC affiliate, WIS Channel 10 in Columbia. So we would go over to a friend's house who had set up an outdoor antenna and would pick up, I want to say WRDW, whatever, I think it was Channel 12 in Augusta, and we'd watch it through the snow and roll on the floor. The first crew was great, but I would say the late 80s. The church lady thing was in 87. And, oh, by the way, they said Dana Carvey took over. What show did he take over on one of the cable? It wasn't Seth Meyers. It was one of the cable channels. And they said, oh, he was off the chain. He was hilarious. And, they're talking about trying to get him, you know, he's getting up, he got to be up close to in his 60s. They're talking about giving him a show.
He should have one. Yeah, you know, I can't even name any of the cast members from the past 10, 15 years, possibly longer. So that's how long, at least for me, the show has really even ceased to be relevant. Yeah, church lady. How did I forget about her? Let's see. Roseanne, and Dana. Who is Jane Curtin's character on the news cast they always did? Oh, now I'm going back 40 years or more. I don't know. I used to like the show a great deal. I don't. Yeah, early. Early episodes of the show did have a problem with the local censorship boards or whatever. I don't really know why. It's not as though they said, what was George Carlin's bit about? The seven words you can't say on television. Not sure I can say them here either, but... No, it's not. Oh, and I think on one of those broadcasts, he actually did say them. CBS or NBC or someone got fined, I don't know, you know, a couple of $100,000 or whatever. But yeah, the seven words you can never say. So it's not like they said one of those. And on the other hand, I've actually heard one of those seven words on regular broadcast TV, probably not that long after. So I guess if it's part of a movie or part of a play or part of a song, I guess you can't censor it, because then it's considered art.
Roger that, and it's everything on BBC One. There's a show called Cobra. It's kind of a drama series they're airing on PBS right now, Masterpiece. And it's about a liberal PM of the UK and these incredible natural and man-made disasters. And Cobra is not some covert thing. It just means a conference in Boardroom One. It's really kind of a boring thing, but it's kind of like Joint Chiefs of Staff and, you know, stuff like that. They dealt with a solar flare. But it's so chopped on the PBS broadcast because they have to keep cutting the F-bombs. So it's like a staccato soundtrack. And I picked up the full series just to watch it. I got a 99-cent deal to watch PBS online, and I think I watched two or three episodes and I canceled it before I got charged again. But that's basically what it is on BBC One. And you can kind of cheat and find ways around it to the kitchen to pick up live streams on the net from BBC One and ITV One through whatever, and other British series, but there ain't no censorship. Not at all.
Definitely is not. bbc.co.uk/iPlayer. If that's the exact URL, I don't know. Now, here's the problem. BBC doesn't allow their content to stream from outside the UK. So you're going to have to do some kind of sleight of hand if you have access to a proxy server, if you know what that is. You got to go through a proxy server with a UK IP address, and then you can stream all those BBC One, you know, BBC 2, 3, and 4 shows. And, I was watching quite a lot of them for quite a while because I was shut in for a while. I had really nowhere to go. You know, so shows like Waterloo Road became my guilty pleasure, which is kind of like, what's the American show, that 90210 show? What is it, Beverly Hills 90210? You know, instead of rich Beverly Hills, substitute poor Manchester, and basically the same show. But yeah, you can get through the region blocks.
You gotta have a VPN, the right VPN. Because if you get the wrong VPN, yeah, you can watch it, but they get a lot of interruptions and a lot of stuttering. There was an app that you could download, and you could get all the stuff in standard definition. And what it was people all over the world that were watching it and would set up as a virtual server on their cell phone or Android TV box or laptop, what have you. and they would share it. And so sometimes it was really bad resolution, no high definition, but you could pick up the stuff. Well, that service, ironically, never got hit for doing HBO or Showtime or even BBC. The Indian government shut them down for rebroadcasting cricket matches. And that's how the guy, it was called Mobdro, M-O-B-D-R-O. And, but over a cricket match in India is how the guy finally went up in the Who's Gal.
Okay, here's the NordVPN app, if it ever bloody gets here. Connect now or pick a country, except you're not showing me a list of countries. On Mac OS, this is a problem. On the Windows machine, let's see, we bring up the Windows machine. But, yeah, NordVPN does, here we go. Connect to somewhere. Connect to United Kingdom. If it does it. Okay, connecting to United Kingdom number 2200. And let's go to VPN player, or BBC player. But, yeah, NordVPN, and the other one that would work is ExpressVPN. Star Trek actress Nicole Nichols dies at age 89.
But you know what, I wound up, when I got back into this, into ham, in this little small way with just the repeaters, I really watched a whole lot less TV. I can get Tubi TV, and I can watch for free Dark Shadows. Gosh, talk about a show that we used to rush home from school to catch at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on our ABC affiliate. Not just for the corny vampire, Barnabas Collins, werewolf stories, but the watch mistakes, because a lot of times they had to do it live. And there was all kind of goofy crap that went on that just was beautiful. And I actually got to meet Jonathan Frid, who got severely typecast. He came to a speech to do a talking tour in the late 80s in Columbia. And unfortunately, only about 10 people showed up to watch him, because by that time, people had forgotten who Jonathan Frid was. But it was amazing, and he served ice cream to all of us. We got all the ice cream we could eat, and especially since we didn't have a big crowd, we got a lot more. We had to finish it off, but he was an interesting character. He used to, back when the show was on the air, man, he was a regular on Dick Cavett. He was a creepy-looking dude, but, man, the little teenage gals would send him some really risque stuff. They fell in love with the show. But I can watch that anytime I want, that and the classic Doctor Who on Tubi TV. So if I want to watch it, I can watch it.
How to exile the cat. Yeah, well, some of the old, the old Doctor, retro TV on channel 50-something or 51-something, they got the old Doctor Who episodes. I actually like most of the newer ones better when they rebooted the series, like, around 2005 or so. Except, of course, the last three seasons, which have generally been rubbish, but that was always a funny show. The thing about Doctor Who is it's good. It's so lousy, it's good. The greatness of the show comes from how crappy it was. I'm not sure how to explain that. But, you know, just not the fault of the actors or necessarily the writers or anyone else. Just, it was really, really well done crap.
And, I mean, you had actors who were basically in a poorly lighted or flat lighted room, and they had to make you believe that you were on, you know, the planet of the Daleks. Which in itself, I got to meet the guy who invented the Daleks, Terry Nation. And it was meant to be a complete joke. The show was, when it originally started in 63, was supposed to be like a historical traveler show. You know, the education thing. Wasn't supposed to be any bug-eyed monsters. So, the Brits, they got like liquid peppers in this container, and it's got little, you know, ribs on the outside, or little balls on the outside, so it wouldn't fall out of your hands. So he added a toilet plunger and a guy on a tricycle on the inside, and they went like, that's such a ridiculous monster, we'll let it go. And of course they became the top villain of everything. But the best doctor of the classic series remains Tom Baker, who's still alive today, who basically drank a lot and played himself. And he's a big cat guy. He loves kitty cats. One of the memes on the to cheer you up is when you feel bad, here's a picture of Tom Baker playing with kittens. So, and he still does voiceovers. But I agree with it. The new show was good when they rebooted it. I thought the second guy, David Tennant, was pretty cool, although I really didn't think of him as the doctor. I liked Matt Smith better because I think Matt Smith, for being as young as he was, really channeled some of the earlier ones. And unfortunately, when he got to Peter Capaldi, who was phenomenal as Cardinal Richelieu in The Three Musketeers, and just gave up all kind of movie money and everything to be the doctor, was forced to be second fiddle, pretty much, or second banana to the gal, Jenna Louise Coleman, who the BBC was prepping to become play Victoria, which everybody wound up hating in the UK, and they wound up canceling the series. So it was downhill from there. They're trying to bring back one of the early, the guy who rebooted it, Russell T. Davies. And they finally got a guy back doing the role. But I don't think it's there. It's been on, back on since 2005, so that's 17 years. I don't know. It needs to be fun again.
So, get rid of, what's her name? Jodie Whittaker. Actually, I like her. She's not, you know, casting her as the doctor was an interesting choice. She's not necessarily bad in the role. But who are all these bloody idiots she had? You know, get back one of the doctor's older companions. Get back Billy Piper. I'd like to see her again. Or who else? The writing or the casting or something has gone adrift. What happened in the last couple of seasons is they tried to introduce more historical themes. You know, so they had an Indian independence theme, and another one they went back to Alabama or somewhere with a black civil rights theme, and they try to weave all these other historical bits in, and somehow it didn't quite work. You know, plus, you know, the doctor either always traveled alone, or he had maybe at most one other traveling companion, you know, usually some hot girl. How many people, what do we got, like an entire busload of people now? So focus more on quality and not so much on quantity.
Her, I agree, she's not that bad of an actress. There was, of course, a great deal of resentment because they dared cast a woman in the role, although going back to the early 70s, they thought about the third Doctor being a woman instead of John Pertwee, you know, the kind of velvet smoking jacket playboy-looking dude, who is still my second fave to Tom Baker. But Jodie Foster goes away in November. It's going to be the 100th anniversary of the BBC. So she's going to bow out, and she's going to be replaced by a black guy, an African guy, named Nkutu Gawe or something like that. But she was given horrible scripts, and I agree with you. The Rosa Parks one was like, it did not go over well because it wasn't really truthful, and it was very heavy-handed, beat you over the head with a baseball bat content.
It was Rosa Parks, and that was pretty much the first of the Jodie Whittaker's seasons. I think by the second or third season, it's still rubbish. No, I agree with you on the old series. Something about Tom Baker, what was he, like the fourth Doctor? Baker has that glint in his eye. It's like the right combination of, slightly crazy and how do you describe that look he gets? It's like all-knowing, a little bit out there. He was probably just almost perfect for the character out of the old Doctors. And quite frankly, I don't remember that much of any of the other ones. I remember a lot of the companions, though. It's been such a while since I've seen the old show. They rerun it periodically on that channel 50.4 or something, but that's one of the channels I have considerable trouble with.
The character Sarah Jane was perhaps one of the most popular ones, even though now I look back and found her early feminist portrayals a little irritating. She was a crossover between John Pertwee, the guy with the white hair, that was late 1969 to 1974 when Baker took over. And they brought her back during a Tenet show and actually made a sub-series, the Sarah Jane Adventures. Unfortunately, she contracted cancer and passed away at 63 because her spinoff was doing well. And as she aged, she became a much better actress that really added to the show. The Doctor would visit her, Tennant's Doctor, and then Matt Smith's Doctor would visit her on that show once in a while. As far as old companions, for Jodie Whittaker's swan song, they're bringing back Janet Fielding, who played the Australian stewardess during the Fifth Doctor, Peter Davison era. I found her Tegan, which I found her to be a little bit on the grating side. And then the last companion that was with Sylvester McCoy, number 7, Sophie Aldred, that played kind of like the punk rocker, street gang girl, Ace. Well, they're older now, and so they're going to give them a role. I guess that was the only two companions that really wanted to come back. But I tell you, watching the episodes, they were all in black and white. I really believe that the second Doctor, we really would have liked him. And, the first one was William Hartnell. So the, Patrick Troughton was probably the best actor, and he came back to be in multi-Doctor episodes over time. He unfortunately died in 87 at a fan convention. His doctors told him not to travel, and he went ahead, and he didn't wake up the next morning.
To BNG, if anyone bloody cares. Yeah, what was I about to say about, yeah, you know, something about Tom Baker, no, who was I about to, oh, yeah, I think the show is designed to be campy, and I don't think it was entirely meant to be taken too seriously. Oh, yeah, we started to talk about the Daleks, yeah. The most feared creature in the universe looks like a trash can. And, I mean, they should have done an episode where the first Dalek invasion was defeated because it was trash day. And they all ended up at the dump. You did not exterminate the humans? No, we came on trash day. We're all at the dump. So, and you know, who were the Cybermen? Another kind of ridiculous. You know, a lot of really ridiculous looking villains, which is why I guess the show was sort of designed to be campy. It was designed to be almost a caricature of itself. I'm trying. There was one from one of the other. Remember the crinoids? These plants, these basically human-eating plants. Oh, wait a minute, the Silurians. There you go. Now, they did bring back the Silurians for a couple of episodes. The Silurians were what? They lived here sometime before the dinosaurs, and then I guess they moved to the inside of the planet because the outside was too cold. They're actually one of the more believable villains. Yeah, so that's why I say the show is its genius, its greatness is in how bad it is, or how bad it sometimes seems to be.
Doctor changed the TARDIS, which was a police box, which was the call box that they had for the cops to step in and call for backup, the bobbies. And they only got it fixed one time during the guy with the Ronald McDonald clown outfit, Colin Baker, who was a great actor but was given terrible role scripts and even worse companions. They actually canceled the show for 18 months and trying to get him to quit. And then they eventually fired him. He was the only doctor to really be fired because he refused. After they treated him so bad, he said, well, we need you to come back and do a regeneration. And he said, you know, what they could do with that. So they fired him, which is really hard to believe with the BBC. They don't fire anybody.
They really do. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that much about BBC's, but you're right. I don't think if they really have to get rid of somebody, it's not that common. But, oh yeah, what did I start to say about the history of television and how television was considered an ephemeral medium that no one would ever want to watch twice? A lot of those old BBC Doctor Who episodes, there was a story about that. A lot of them were gone forever. Because, like soap operas in this country, and most other things in this country, and on the BBC, they were shot live. So, a few years ago, a bunch of Doctor Who fans went around to all the television stations. Do you have old kinescopes or old video tapes? Oh, no, we ain't got that, mate. No, we don't save any of that. And, you know, back then they might have had videotape, but it was, you know, hey, that's a 100-pound reel of tape you're holding there. If you don't want it, we're going to erase it. So they had videotape, but it was very expensive. But there was an interesting bit on how they eventually tracked down some of these episodes. And when you mentioned something about India, that's what I thought of. BBC used to export all their programming on 16mm film to, like, the entire English-speaking world. So eventually, all these Doctor Who hunters went around and They would call TV stations in Australia, South Africa, India, you know, Ireland, the United States, whatever, and that's how they located some of these old reels of film. Because the TV stations, the foreign TV stations, when they were done with them, they were supposed to either destroy them or send them back. But, of course, very few of them ever did. So that's how a lot of that, you know, we forget about that. We forget about the fact that back in the day, you know, TV was basically, it wasn't really designed to be preserved. And, you know, we think of that as being odd now. It wasn't so odd then.
Kinescope, wasn't it? That's how most of the, or all of the Honeymooner episodes were preserved. You basically had a black and white monitor, and you pointed a 16mm sound camera at it.
What it was, I have a 16mm film camera pointing at a TV screen. In the U.S., you've got to have some weird five-bladed shutter to smooth out the frame rate. You've got to do like 4 to 5 pull down for each four frames of film. You end up with 5 frames of video. That's for the reverse. That's for telescene. Telescene is making film back into video. That's where you have the frame rate problem. Yeah, kinescope was just, you know, 16mm camera pointed at TV screen, shot at, you know, whatever the frame rate was supposed to be. And back then, that was the only way you could really preserve television. You know, live TV, back then was live TV. Oh, you're in the loo? You missed it? Sorry, it's gone.
KD4SRRID. Yeah, I mean, the live stuff was great. I was amazed. I never did really care for Peter Pan all that much. But what was her name that played the original one they did live on TV? You were thinking about so many things could have gone wrong. And I'm trying to think of her. Kathy Rigby did it on Broadway, the little gymnast. But I'm trying. I can just see her name now, but it was also one of the first color broadcasts when they had the big 600-plus-pound behemoth cameras. They didn't even have zoom lenses, I don't think, at that time. I think you had to rack them with the tri-lenses. But NBC did it live, but at least by that time they had the big quad machines, the huge reels of tape, and that's how they did it.
Hey, Martin, because she was the original Peter Pan. The camera weighed like 200 pounds. It was the size of a suitcase. You've got the turret with the 3 or 4 rotating lenses because, you know, zoom lenses didn't work too well. You didn't have decent zoom lenses back then. And, yeah, you had the videotape machines that used this big reel of, you know, 1 or 2 inch tape and was probably a big machine. That's why you didn't really have anything on videotape, because the only reason they used videotape back then was I want to record all the East Coast shows for rebroadcast on the West Coast is the primary, you know, I have something earlier today I want to play later. So after a couple of days, the videotape would be gone. It goes back into the, you know, recycle and use later pile. You know, hey, man, that's a $200 reel of tape. If you want to keep that, you'd better have a good reason. So, yeah, people don't realize that most of the television, much before about 1965, 1970, is basically gone.
And in the case, yeah, that Mary Martin was who I was thinking about. That was actually, I was thinking it was done around 59, but I think it was re-aired in 59. That was shot, I think, in 55, so it was one of the very first color major broadcasts. But, yeah, they had those huge RCA cameras. And that's an interesting story right there on the side, too. How did they decide on the RCA standard over what Columbia Broadcasting had? Columbia Broadcasting had a color system from back in the 30s. They saw no reason to have a black and white system. But when it came to Congress and the FCC, The reason we didn't have the Columbia system, and also another thing about that, that's the one that they took to the moon, because it didn't have to be white balanced with the white card and then the gray card, the gray scale and all that. It could somehow or another, and I forget how it was done, find absolute white. But the reason it got rejected is because the RCA paid lobbyists asked, well, is it compatible with black and white TV? And Columbia Broadcasting, CBS, looked at them and said, well, why would you want a black and white TV? You can have a color TV. Well, the poor won't be able to afford a color TV. And they were like, no, it'll be the same price. They shut them down. So that's the reason we had black and white TVs and had to pay $1,000 or more in those times for a really crappy system that required special lights, and you know, it gave colors all right, purple people, green backgrounds, and, you know, really almost artificial looking. And it was a $1,100 set that once they brought it out, put it up, mama, you don't dare move it. You don't turn the vacuum cleaner on in front of it when it's on, or we're going to have to come out and degauss your screen. And because of the heat buildup, they were breaking down all the time.
The CBS system, it actually, in terms of the quality and rendition of colors, was superior. The problem is it had mechanical moving parts. It was sequential color. You had a rotating disc either in front of or just behind the camera lens. You had this rotating red-green with, you know, disc with red, green, blue sectors. So on the other end, obviously, you had a black and white CRT, but now you have the problem of synchronizing this other rotating disc. Not a real big problem, but, you know, plus it's, well, you know, okay, big deal. It's a mechanical system, or it's a partially mechanical system. And yes, I'm glad you're probably one of the only ones, the other ones who knows that. That was the system that went to the moon, and I'll tell you how you know. Look at the launch of Apollo 17 Ascent stage from the moon. You know, the tilting of the camera, by the way, was actually, the camera was on the lunar rover, which was parked about 200 feet away, and it can remotely pan up and down. So it took a lot of practice to compensate for the signal delay to say, okay, I got to start panning it up now, because by the time it gets the command to pan up, it'll already take off. But anyway, I digress. If you look at the sparks that come out at the base of the ascent stage, right before that engine ignites, you'll see red, green, and blue sparkles. And what's happening is, because it's a sequential system, the little particles of burning whatever it is, burning rocket fuel, or just burning metal debris, are moving between the frames, and that's why they appear as red, green, and blue colors. It moved between the first color frame, the red and the green frame, which is why you see that. In theory, it wasn't a bad system, but I always thought maybe because, you know, mechanically it was more complicated. You know, the rotating disc in front of the CRT would have limited the size of the screen. Not that it was real big before. I don't know if you remember all craning your necks, standing around to watch a 12-inch screen. But, you know, too bad, because in some ways it would have been, it would have worked out better. You know, the frame rate is lower, et cetera, and you've got that weird artifact that happens when something moves between frames, that weird color fringing.
Neat effect, though. It looked kind of cool. And like I said, it was actually, once you got everything synchronized, it was a better system. I had a girlfriend whose aunt let her live in a house while she'd moved to a assisted living. Back then you didn't have to wheel your house to the nursing home or assisted living or whatever. Well, anyway, she had a 1959 RCA color set. It was still working. Perfect condition. And, yeah, it was a small screen, and it was kind of weird looking at it, you know, in the round, because they didn't have any square or rectangular scenes. But by that time, they had improved broadcast television, where that darn TV actually looked pretty good. Like I said, if you could just get used to like, looking through a porthole.
The severe disadvantage of the RCA system is light sensitivity. In the early cameras, you had to split the image three ways. I've got to send the same image to three imaging tubes, or later maybe three different CCD things. I got to do a three-way prism that splits it into a red, green, and blue image. So that means you need a lot of light, which I think maybe you did mention that. But that was the other advantage the CBS system had is, you know, less light is needed because it's a single black and white tube. I'm not splitting it among two other tubes.
Sorry, I had to step away for a second. And, you know, I wondered about that. But $1,000 in 1960... That was a ton of money. Heck, you could buy a Biscayne Chevrolet, you know, the lowest model, four-door sedan, with straight drive and an AM radio for not a whole lot more. And so the fact is that you had such limited programming, and pretty much RCA slash NBC were the only ones that had color broadcasts, and also the fact that CBS, now that their system had been defeated, was still doing mostly everything in monochrome, including the most popular Sunday night show, Ed Sullivan, for, I think, when did they go color, 67? People just didn't see the need for a funky-looking picture that they could only use like a few hours a week.
Slow to change. I think my family had that black and white TV we swept down from New York. We had that like well into the 80s, middle to late 80s. So, yeah, even after color became available, a lot of people, you know, okay, yeah, it's color, big deal. I mean, yeah, okay, it's gotten better now, but how many decades did it really take? And, you know, and again, not like there was anything to watch back then. Let's see, there was four stations in the New York City area, maybe more. Let's see, channel 2, 7, and 5 or something, or 2, and channel 11, or channel 9. Hey, there might have been as many as 4, but, you know, it's not like there was a whole lot to watch anyway. Now there's only too much, there's almost too much. I personally really don't even want to bother anymore, because, oh yeah, what was I doing? Yeah, I was here at the BBC Player website, and I was going to try to see if I could actually play anything using NordVPN. I know I've done this before, because I used to, when I had nothing to do, I would sit here and then binge, you know, entire seasons of whatever. BBC News. Scotland, Northern Ireland, here, what's on news? Now, I mean, no, that's, all right, I'll figure it out later. But, yeah, NordVPN is one of the VPNs that works. I guess you got to go in and create an account. You know, it asks you if you have a TV license. You know, and then I guess pick some, you know, some region somewhere, and you could get it to their website.
Roger that. I think Nord charges, what, about 10 or 11 bucks a month, though?
For as little as $3 or $4 a month. I think I'm paying $80 or $90 for a 2 or 3 year subscription. It gets cheaper when you buy in bulk. In fact, it might actually have gone up slightly. Yeah, if you want to commit to the longer subscription, I think you could get $3, $4 a month. ExpressVPN is probably the only other one that works well with BBC iPlayer, and I think they were considerably more money.